Everyone, and welcome to episode 57 of the True Crime All the Time podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, what's going on?
Doing good, man. How you doing?
All right, man. I'm doing good, too.
Got to get that in there every now and then, or I get yelled at.
57 episodes in, and we've really got it nailed.
We do. How you doing?
How you doing? What we said like 40 episodes ago, that we were going to try to figure out something better for the intro.
Yeah. Didn't work, did it?
You know what? It is what it is, folks. Yeah.
Eat it up.
Hey, folks, you've heard me talk about Audible for a number of years now, and there's a lot of reasons why I love it. One is that Audible lets you enjoy all your audio entertainment in one app, and you'll always find the best of what you love, and there's a lot of new things to discover. Audible is the home of storytelling. They have an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. You also discover thousands of podcasts, from your popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. But there's so much more that you get beyond that one title. Members get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts. You can download or stream their included titles all you want. I've been listening to Then She Was Gone, a novel by Lisa Jewell. It's about a young girl's disappearance, and it's very well done. And I'm always amazed at how engaged I am while listening to the story. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT, T-C-A-T-T, to 500-500. All right, so let's start out with our Patreon supporters. We had Amy Ruckamontes.
Ruckamontes.
Marianne Kershaw. Paul Morell. Brandy Hensley, Allison Deming, Leanne Westvang.
I think we were talking earlier, sounds like a vampire. Family vampire name. That's all.
Is that it? That's calling it. Our supporter a vampire?
Well, I'm just saying it's a really cool name.
It is a cool name.
Vampire-ishy.
Troy Tempest, Rebecca Morgan, Jen Miller, Salma Flores, Crystal Elganian.
Oh, you think you're good?
That's what I got, man.
Okay.
It is.
You're learning.
Crystal, reach out to me because this is a spelling I've never seen before.
Got to get hook on phonics.
You can't even say hooked. And you're going to get hooked on phonics. Channing Thomas. Almost said Channing Tatum.
My buddy.
Channing Tatum supporting us on Patreon.
Yeah.
Angie Barnes. And then on PayPal, we had Eugene Pace supported us. And then if we go into the Patreon vault, this week we selected Scott K. So big shout out to Scott. Been a long time supporter.
He's an okay guy, man.
He's an okay guy.
Scotty K.
Just Scotty K. But with all the hubbub around Patreon, talking about adding fees and this and that, and then they turn right around and say, you know what? We made a mistake. We're not going to do that. It makes it even that much better that, you know, people are sticking with us. We did actually lose quite a bit of Patreon supporters over that thing, which is, I don't blame those folks.
Baby, come back.
I blame Patreon because they didn't even put the change in, but, you know, worried everybody that they were going to do it.
Run on the bank, like.
And didn't think about it ahead of time. That's what, you know, really gets to me because none of the creators wanted it. Yeah. Nobody wanted to pass on extra fees to their Patreon supporters just to keep so that we would get a little higher percentage.
It's all good now, though.
We were fine. Yeah, they're not going to do it, so we're happy about that. So we got to give a big shout out to Maggie.
Maggie.
We're doing part two of Dahmer.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, this is in Maggie's backyard. She loves it, loves it. So her writing and research on this one was amazing. And then on True Crime All the Time Unsolved, episode out right now on George Smith. So we're talking about some newlyweds who go on a Royal Caribbean cruise for their honeymoon, and the groom ends up missing. But it's more than just missing. I mean, there's a lot of evidence.
Yeah, suspicion of foul play.
Pointing to the fact that he was probably most likely murdered.
Right.
And then you have the investigation. And, you know, it was interesting in doing the research how many of these types of things happen on these cruises. There's a ton of them out there.
There is. There really is.
So it's an interesting episode. Everybody check that one out.
We have a listener on our social media, and she's really been good to us, and she did something really cool today, man. She donated her kidney just because 'tis the season.
To a total stranger.
Yeah. Laura yeah. Clark. Yeah.
Which was actually very, very amazing. So yeah. I'm glad you remembered that, Gibbs, so we could give her a shout out. You know, stuff like that, I mean, that is totally selfless. I mean,
yeah.
She's not getting anything out of that. I mean, yeah. She's not even helping a family member.
No, yeah, she got a little shout out right now, but that's
she's
it.
Doing that to save a perfect stranger's life.
Yeah, I love that. I love that somebody in this world today are still stepping up to the plate and doing things, doing the right thing.
Yep, so good on her. It's an amazing story. Now we get to somebody not so amazing,
because
we're going to be talking about Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah.
The opposite of Laura.
Bad dude.
So where we left off in the last episode, Dahmer had already committed some murders. He's working at the chocolate factory. We talked about that. He was playing with his mannequin. He was doing a lot of stuff that a lot of people talking about the episode last week that we talked about him masturbating a lot. But
you sure did, man.
The guy did. And
he did, though.
He continues to do it. So
yeah.
There's a really good chance I'm going to have to say it again. So we're up to November of 1987. Dahmer's still living with his grandmother. And he meets a man from Michigan by the name of Stephen Tormey, 25 years old. They meet at a bar. And Dahmer suggests that they go back to the Ambassador Hotel. So they rent a room and they're going to spend some time together.
A little quality time.
A little quality time together.
Yeah.
And from Dahmer's own account of the story, he did not set out to murder Stephen Tormey when he had the idea of going back to the hotel with him. Now, he did mean to drug him and rape him while he was passed out. Because we talked about that a lot in the first episode.
Yeah.
This is his M.O. He likes for his victims to be incapacitated, lifeless. And so that's what he had in mind for this incident. But Dahmer says he woke up the next morning and he found Stephen lying under him, all bruised up, had bruises all over him, and his chest was caved in. There was blood dripping out of the corner of his mouth. Now, at the same time, Jeffrey Dahmer is covered in bruises all up and down his arms. So this was a very physical encounter. But he doesn't seem to remember the encounter that well. But the end result is that, you know, Stephen ends up dead. You know, he'll say later that he has no memory of how it happened, what exactly happened that caused Stephen to die. But Dahmer leaves the hotel and he goes and buys a large suitcase. And this is what he uses to take the body out of this hotel. If you think about it, Gibbs, in the vein of planning a murder, he really wasn't planning a murder. He didn't have anything with him.
Right.
So some of what he's saying does make sense.
Oh, sure.
He had to go out the next day because he did something he was not expecting to do.
Right. Go get his little suitcase. And
so he leaves the hotel with Stephen's body in the suitcase. And remember, he's living with his grandmother. So he goes back to his grandmother's house with this suitcase. And once he gets the suitcase down to the basement, this is where things go very, very dark. It's already dark. He's murdered a man. But now he has sex with the corpse. So We're talking about necrophilia at this point.
He gets the body in the suitcase, takes it back to grandma's house, takes it downstairs, unzips it, rolls him out, does his little sex thing. Okay, I just want to make sure, you know.
No, I think you've encapsulated it.
Yeah.
But remember, at this point, Stephen is dead. He is in the state that Jeffrey Dahmer prefers.
Right.
Right. He can't leave. He can't protest. He can't do anything. He can't say anything.
Right.
And Dahmer's going to talk about this a lot later on. But he's also going to state that, you know, he was masturbating constantly on the corpse. He was slicing parts of Stephen's flesh off. And then about a week after having this corpse of Stephen Tormey in the basement, he proceeds to dismember the body. That is a long time to have a body in your house. It's going to start to smell, Gibbs.
And we know that has a funky smell to it because we confirmed that with another episode we did.
Yeah, the Anthony Soul episode, there are a lot of similarities here. There's a lot of differences, but there's a lot of similarities as well. So he removes the head, the arms, the legs from the body, but he also fillets the flesh from the bones completely. And then what Dahmer said is that he cut the flesh up into small pieces so that he could easily dispose of it. He put everything into trash bags except for the bones. And then he took the bones, wrapped those up, and smashed them with a sledgehammer. This is a lot of work.
It is, man.
And you're not living by yourself. Your grandmother
is upstairs,
living with you upstairs.
Honey, what are you doing down there? Oh, nothing, Grandma. Just working on a little project.
A sledgehammer makes a hell of a lot of noise. But I say it sounds like a lot of work. Dahmer said that he did all this in about 2 hours.
Really fast, I would think.
It seems like it. From that description, it seems like that would take a long time.
That you have to be really good at it, you know?
So after all of that, he throws everything into the trash except for the head. And he kept the head for 2 weeks, kept it wrapped up in a blanket. Now, at one point, he tried to boil the head in a mixture of detergent and bleach because he thought this was going to keep it intact. And all the while, during this two-week period, he is using this skull for sexual gratification.
Really gross, man.
Oh, it is. I mean, there's going to be a lot of unbelievably twisted, gross. I mean, you could use 50 different adjectives to describe what he does.
Sure could.
But eventually this skull, it starts to fall apart, you know, because of all the harsh chemicals, and he's handling it a lot.
Yeah, he is.
So as it starts to fall apart, he smashes it up with the sledgehammer as well into little pieces, and he gets rid of it. And the remains of Stephen have never been found. So this comes from Dahmer and Dahmer alone, right? This is not like they found the remains of Stephen Tormey. You know, right. Dahmer just talked about it after the fact.
I started saving the skeletons and preserving other parts. And one thing led to another. It took more and more deviant type behaviors to satisfy my urges. And so it just spiraled out of control.
We're going to hear a lot from Dahmer himself in this episode. And the one thing that strikes me, Gibbs, is he's actually very well spoken. He seems like he is fairly intelligent, but then he had this unbelievable dark side. And in all of these interviews, he talks about it like it's nothing. I mean, he does show a little bit, I don't even know if I'd call it remorse. I think he knows it was wrong.
Yeah.
Because he talks about that. But it's very matter-of-factly. And we see that a lot from serial killers.
Oh, absolutely. Too much, unfortunately. I think that's initially takes everybody back a step, you know? They're like, this guy's just telling it like he was telling you how his office job went today.
But you hear him talking about keeping the skulls and, you know, the sexual connection. And this is another thing you hear a lot. it starts out small, but then that's not enough, right? Whatever somebody's doing is not enough to satisfy that frog demon, that sexual component. And so they ratchet it up, and that's okay for a little while, but then that's not enough to satisfy the cravings either. And it just keeps going and going. And the next thing you know, it's murder and it's necrophilia and it's all these horrible things. So after he committed this murder, you know, Dahmer's ready to find more men to satisfy his sexual urges. You know, he is a predator at this point. He's visiting gay bars. He's luring men back to his home that he shares with his grandma. I have to keep saying that.
You know, grandma's... A lot of grandmas turn away sometimes, you know?
Well, they're probably not. He's in the basement most of the time. And I have a feeling that she was probably in bed by the time he's getting home from these bars. I mean, she's not up at 11, 12, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning.
She watched her Johnny Carson's and went to bed.
Maybe didn't even make it up for Johnny. But Dahmer would drug these individuals. There was usually sex involved. And then in a lot of cases, he would strangle them to death. And he's going to talk a little bit about his type. He didn't really have a concrete type. What he would say is there were men that caught his eye. You know, he preferred good-looking men, but age ranges vary pretty wildly. You know, his next victim was 14 years old. That's a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, he really took it to a different level, really.
This 14-year-old was named James Dockstader, and Dahmer said that he paid James $50 to pose for some naked pictures for him. And this is a theme that you're going to see a lot with Dahmer as well. He was really big into photography, not just as a ruse, but he would keep these pictures as trophies.
Little tip, if you're going to do nude photography, get the money up front.
Nude modeling.
Get it up front.
Well, what does it matter if you get the money up front? If he's going to kill you, he's just going to take the money back. And you're going to be dead.
I'm just talking outside of Dahmer.
If you're not going to be killed.
If you're not going to be killed, get the money up front anyway.
Okay. Because for these people, it wasn't going to matter. You know, the minute that he targeted them they made the decision that they were going to go with him.
Their date was due.
They were in big, big trouble. So Dahmer was able to get James down in the basement. Drug him, strangle him to death. And in this instance, you know, different than the previous victim, he was already at home. He didn't have to transport the body, but he just left the body in the basement for about a week again before he did was essentially the same thing as he did to Steven. Now, he kept the skull again, placed all the rest of the remains in the trash. This time, and he would experiment with these skulls. You know, this time he boiled it. He was doing a lot of experimentation to see what worked, what didn't work. But eventually this one, it broke down as well. And you think of a skull, I don't want to get too macabre, but you think of a skull as something very sturdy.
Yeah.
But the fact of him boiling it and using all these detergents and I think that had something to do with him breaking down. This one, he said, turned into dust.
Well, I mean, bone's porous, so.
Yeah, but he's also using the skulls.
Yeah, he's putting wear and tear.
Yes.
I guess the best way to say it.
He is. I mean, he's using them as part of his sexual gratification, so they're wearing down. But he said, you know, his skull turned to dust.
It's a lot of use.
Now, in March of 1988, Dahmer meets a man named Richard Guerrero. And this is outside of a gay bar. It's called The Phoenix. And like others, he's able to lure Guerrero back to his home. And I say his home, but it's really grandma's home.
It's granny's.
He's living there. But he drugs him. He strangles him to death. And this one's a little tough because it was said that he performed oral sex on the corpse.
How does that work?
I don't want to know how it works.
I don't want to say the word curious because I'm not curious.
I don't know
how that works.
I don't think it does. I don't know. This guy.
It's really weird.
This is not one that I'm trying to figure out.
Right.
Jeffrey Dahmer. But ultimately, Dahmer, you know, he treats this victim in the same exact way. Dismembering, cutting up, keeping the skull until it's no longer usable. The very next month, he brings another man home, drugs him by giving him some laced coffee. But something different happens here, Gibbs. His grandma comes down.
Uh-oh.
And Dahmer would explain that, you know, she called down to him. She's like, "Hey, Jeff, is that you?" And he tried to play it off like he was alone, but he knew that it wasn't work. He knew his grandma knew somebody else was there. So he did not kill this man. But a funny thing happens right after this. His grandma finally tells him he's got to go in September of 1988. And I don't think the reasons why are probably that surprising. You know, he's bringing home a lot of men, late hours. But probably the biggest thing is the smell coming from the basement where he lives. Again, Gibbs, you know that was a very putrid, very strong smell that would have wafted all the way up through that house.
Had to be rough living there.
It did.
Yeah.
She had to have known, probably maybe not what was going on, but something's not right. He's got to get out of here. And she kicks him out. You know, my wife and I, we both use Rakuten when we shop online to help save money. My wife uses it more than I do because, well, let's face it, she shops more than I do. Rakuten is the most rewarding way to shop and save because members earn cash back on everything that they buy. Rakuten is a shopping platform that partners with over 3,500 stores across every category. You're already shopping at your favorite stores. Why not save while doing it? It really is a no-brainer. I use it for all my techie stuff at stores like Best Buy. My wife uses it at stores like Sephora and Macy. Best of all, membership is free and it's easy to sign up. It's very easy to use. Cashback rates change daily. So start all your shopping at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up.
This episode is brought to you by Noom. Forget one size fits all diets. With Noom, you get a personalized weight loss plan that's tailored to your lifestyle. No food is off limits. Enjoy your favorites while discovering healthier habits. Noom's users love the flexible approach, blending psychology and biology to help you lose weight in a way that's sustainable for you. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
So he ends up finding an apartment on Milwaukee's north side. But just after he moves into this apartment, Jeffrey Dahmer is arrested for drugging and sexually assaulting a 13-year-old boy that he had lured back to his apartment. This was a 13-year-old Laotian boy, and Dahmer apparently offered him $50 to pose for some pictures. He did end up taking some Polaroid pictures of him, and then it got sexual in nature. And in this instance, Dahmer gave this boy some type of Irish cream liqueur, and he laced it with some tablets of Halcyon. You know, he used various things. He used different types of sleeping pills. Whatever he used, these crushed up tablets, it didn't knock this 13-year-old boy out. And he ended up leaving the house. So we talk about this on past episodes, Gibbs. How lucky, now he went through a traumatic experience.
Right.
But how lucky was this boy to be alive?
Oh, big time.
Knowing
big time.
That he was in the grips of that type of serial killer.
Very lucky.
You know, now that kid's, he's about our age, if he's still alive. I don't know. He didn't die in this encounter. His family right. ended up taking him to the hospital because he got sick from these tablets. And then they go to the police. And the police end up arresting Jeffrey Dahmer at the Ambrosia Chocolate Factory where he's working. and he ends up getting convicted of second degree sexual assault and enticing a child for immoral purposes. He initially pleads not guilty, then he changes his plea to guilty, and he actually gets sentenced to 8 years in prison for this, but he's going to do like a fraction. You know, he's going to do like 10 months, I think, tops. But before he even serves any time, he would kill again. And this would be 24-year-old Anthony Sears. And Sears was an aspiring model, you know, good-looking guy. They met at a bar in March of 1989. It's a couple months before he's going to serve this sentence. And actually, Dahmer would say later that he was really trying hard not to kill anyone during this time, because he knows he's about ready to go. He's going to serve some time. But in his words, this guy started talking to him. He was incredibly good looking. So he invites the man back to his grandmother's house because he's back living with his grandmother again after being arrested. And again, he drugs this man, Anthony Sears, strangles him after they had some consensual sexual contact. That's it. I mean, he could have left it at that, right? They had sex.
But he wanted something that didn't move around, man.
But that's not what he wanted. And again, he would have sex with the corpse. Ultimately would put the body in the bathtub, and then the next day would cut off the head, would flay the skin off of the body, stripping the flesh, smashing the bones. I mean, it's just the same thing, the same cycle, and ultimately getting rid of the body in the trash. Now, this is the first victim where Dahmer would keep a long-term trophy. You know, Anthony Sears was somehow very attractive to Jeffrey Dahmer in some special way, because this is the first time he's really going to keep a trophy for a long period of time. But the details of that are astounding, because he preserved his head and he preserved his genitals in some solution of acetone. But that's not even the kicker. He took all of this shit to work.
It's gross. I'm sorry.
And he kept it in his work locker. I mean, just when you think, like, this detail's bad. Okay, now this detail's a little worse. It just, the level of depravity of Jeffrey Dahmer, it's like it knows no limits, right? There's no end to it for him. And when he does ultimately move again out of his grandma's house, he takes all of this with him. And that's why I say there was some connection to Anthony Sears that was different maybe than to some of the other victims, because he didn't keep anything like that long-term that he was going to take with him. This was the first time. So he does this stretch in prison, and in May of 1990, he gets an apartment. 924 North 25th Street. And this was not a nice area. It was described as one of the poorest, most dangerous areas of Milwaukee, very high crime rate. The neighborhood was predominantly African American. But somehow, through all of this, Gibbs, Jeffrey Dahmer was able to keep his job at the chocolate factory.
Every time you say that, I want to say Willy Wonka.
What I think of too.
Yeah.
But he does. He keeps his job. I mean, he was given a work release. He was in some type of work release program where he went to work and then he had to go back, or somehow he was able to keep it. I was just really shocked by that. So this apartment was close to his work. It was cheap, but again, in a very bad area of town. And this is going to be the infamous apartment that everybody remembers from the TV and pulling vats. And I mean, we're going to get into all that, but this is the place. And within a couple of months of moving into this apartment, you know, he murders two men. So he's working in pretty quick succession now. You know, one of these men was named Raymond Smith. He also went by Ricky Lee Beeks. And as Dahmer tells it, he offered Raymond Smith $50 for sex. At his apartment, he gave him a drink mixed with what Dahmer said were a bunch of different types of sleeping pills. He ends up strangling him. The next day, he would take Polaroid pictures of the body after he had posed it in, suggestive ways. But he ends up dismembering Raymond Smith as well, boils the arms, the legs, the pelvis in a big kettle.
Oh, he's took it up a level. Now he's got a big, he's got a little witch's kettle.
This is the thing with him.
Yeah.
You know, it's never, it's similar, but it's more. It's got to be more to get that same type of gratification. You know, this time he dissolved a lot of the bones in acid, but again, he kept the skull. And he ends up spray painting the skull. And I think he did this with the Anthony Sears skull too, because he's going to keep both of these. But something happens in between this victim and the next victim, because he actually has another encounter where he's lured a man back to his house. You know he's going to do the exact same thing to this man as well. But Dahmer makes a huge mistake. He ends up drinking the wrong drink. He drinks the one that is laced, and it causes him to pass out. And this guy robs him blind.
That's great, man.
And takes off.
Got a little of his own medicine. Well,
not much of his medicine, no, but
yeah.
But again, think about this guy until later on when all this is going to come out.
Oh, man. You imagine?
He just thought he got him some free money, got him some free stuff. Come to find out, he was intended to be.
He's going
to
be a mannequin.
Victimized in the same way that all these other people have. That would have been a tough night on the couch, Gibbs, to see that on the news and know that you had that encounter. And that could have been you if things had gone a little differently.
That had been some rough viewing for sure.
Some sleepless nights, I would think.
Yeah.
But not long after that encounter, he does meet a man named Edward Smith. So he's got Raymond Smith, Edward Smith.
Be nervous if you were a Smith.
He gets Edward back to his apartment, drugs him, strangles him. But this time, he doesn't try to do some of the same things. He doesn't use the acid. He doesn't try to bleach the skeleton or, you know, do some of the things that he's done in the past. Now he's going to try putting body parts in the freezer. So again, we're talking about experimentation with Jeffrey Dahmer, and it's all about keeping these individuals with him, right? In some form or capacity or function or something. So if I put it body parts in the freezer, will they last longer? Will they?
Yeah. Trophy.
Yeah. I think that's the type of road that he's going down, but it didn't work. It didn't work the way that he thought it would. So he does end up using acid on the skeleton. And for some reason, it was said that he put the skull of Edward Smith in the stove and it exploded on him. So he's like a mad scientist. He's trying all kinds of different things, and some are working, some are not working, but he's experimenting to figure out what works and what doesn't. Now, about 3 months goes by. In September of 1990, he meets a man named Ernest Miller. Now, Ernest Miller was 24 years old. Now, Dahmer offered Ernest Miller $50 to go home with him, but it wasn't for sex. I mean, that's not what the $50 agreement was for. It was said that Dahmer said he wanted to listen to his heart and stomach like a doctor. And this is going to come out later from an individual who actually got away from Jeffrey Dahmer, who's going to relay this same type of information. But when they get back to the apartment, Dahmer does want things to turn sexual, and he's told that that's going to cost him more money. But we know, Gibbs, that's not a problem for Jeffrey Dahmer.
No.
Doesn't matter how much he's paying, he's going to get that. That money's never leaving his person.
Right.
It might for a minute.
He's going to get them in the door, and that's all it's going
to
do.
But it's coming back to him.
Right.
Because he gives Ernest Miller a laced drink, but apparently the sedative, the sleeping pills, it's not strong enough. And he ends up actually slitting his throat instead of strangling him. And Ernest bleeds out pretty quickly, and he dies. Dahmer takes some Polaroids of him like he had done with other victims. He dismembers the body. He cuts off his head, and Dahmer would say that he would have a conversation with the head as he was doing his work on the rest of the body.
Like Wilson?
Like Wilson from Castaway.
Yeah.
I mean, he's having some serious
mental
issues.
Delusions.
Now, this time, he takes the heart. He takes the biceps and some other pieces, and he puts them in the fridge because he's going to eat them. And a lot of people know Jeffrey Dahmer as a cannibal.
I was branching out. That's when the cannibalism started. Eating of the heart and the arm muscle. It was a way of making me feel that they were a part of me. At first, it was just curiosity, and then it became compulsive.
I mean, that is Jeffrey Dahmer talking about him branching out into cannibalism. I mean, eating the heart, eating the bicep, the arm muscle, just to see what it was like. He would also say that part of the reasoning behind eating parts of the victim was that by doing that, he felt like that person would stay with him. But at the same time, he talks about that it gave him some type of sexual gratification. I don't know how in the hell that happens, but for him, it did. You know, what turned him on? I don't know. Things were crossed. And they do get crossed with some of these serial killers.
This got majorly crossed, man.
But he would also keep Ernest Miller's skull. He would paint it. So he got into painting these skulls and keeping them as trophies. Dahmer next met a man at the mall by the name of David Thomas. He invited him to his house to have some drinks. And again, he talks about offering to pay this man to pose for nude photographs. Drugged his drink. But Dahmer would make some statements about this man later on that once he got back to the apartment, he realized he wasn't attracted to this man. And Dahmer was big on attraction. You know, that's how he selected his victims. He was careful in that regard.
It's a really visual.
Visual person. He wanted only attractive people. And for whatever reason, once he got back, he changed his mind or didn't think this guy was, he wasn't attracted to him. But he killed him because he didn't want the guy to wake up. What was he going to do? He'd already drugged him. So he ended up killing this man, strangled him, dismembered him, but he didn't keep anything. Didn't keep any trophies, didn't put anything in the fridge, didn't do any of that. Because he had no connection to this man. He wasn't attracted to him. Now, what he did do is he did take some photos, and it was said that some of these photographs were taken while the murder was happening. And these photographs would later be used to help ID David Thomas, because he was in the photographs. Dahmer would next kill in February of 1991. And this would be a 17-year-old man that Dahmer saw at a bus stop. Again, he used the, I will give you money to pose for some nude photographs. And there was some possible sex talk as well. Now, this man's name was Curtis Strotter. And they did engage in some oral sex, but then he drugged and strangled him. And he dismembered him. But with Curtis Strotter, Dahmer would keep the hands, the skull, and the genitals. And again, it was said during this that he took photographs, not just of the corpse, as he was dismembering the body. So he was taking photographs of him doing his work. I don't know if he was calling that a souvenir, Gibbs, and he was using that later on for sexual gratification. I mean, he had a lot that he was using for sexual gratification. There's no two ways around it. He talks about it a lot.
Yeah.
In April of that same year, he meets a man named Errol Lindsay. And Lindsay goes back to the apartment. He's drugged. But this is one that a lot of people remember, because Errol Lindsay is the man that Dahmer experimented on. He tried to drill a hole in his skull. And into this hole, you know, he poured hydrochloric acid. He was trying, again, experimenting. Like a mad scientist, he was trying to cause this individual to be almost like lobotomized, where he would still be alive, but wouldn't leave, wouldn't have any thoughts, wouldn't protest against whatever Jeffrey Dahmer wanted to do. This was his like dream, right, Gibbs? Go back to episode one. We talked about the mannequin. What he wanted was a live mannequin.
Right.
That's what I believe.
Yeah, I believe that too.
So he was experimenting on how he could make that happen, but didn't work. The man actually woke up with a hole in his head and, by Jeffrey Dahmer's account, asked him what time it was.
You imagine.
No, I cannot imagine.
I can't either.
He drilled a hole in this guy's head. The guy wakes up, asks him what time it is, and says, I have a headache. It would be the worst headache that anybody could ever have. You have a hole in your head. So what does Dahmer do? He drugs him again, and he proceeds to strangle him because the experiment didn't work. And with Errol Lindsay, Dahmer would cut off his head, would keep the skull. He did even more experimentation with the body. You know, he tried to preserve it. He tried different things, cold water, salt. He used all kinds of different things to see what would work. None of this stuff that he was trying was working.
Killing was just a means to an end. That was the least satisfactory part. I didn't enjoy doing that. That's why I tried to create living zombies with muriatic acid in the drill. But it never worked. No, the killing wasn't the objective. I just wanted to have the person under my complete control, not having to consider their wishes, being able to keep them there as long as I wanted. It's not easy to say that, but that's what the motive was. I don't know, maybe I felt I had no control as a child or young adult, and that got mixed in with my sexuality, and I ended up doing what I did was my way of feeling in complete control, at least for that situation, creating my own little world where I had the final say, finding the best looking guy that I could, and having total mastery over him for as long as I wanted. Lust played a big part of it, controlling lust. That was the motive.
So there you can really hear Jeffrey Dahmer talking about kind of what made him tick. Maybe as the reasons why he did what he did, a lot of it about control, a lot of it about lust and mixed up with sex. You know, very interesting to hear Dahmer in his own words.
A lot of pieces to the, you know, pieces to that puzzle.
A lot of layers.
Yeah, layers.
I mean, the guy did some horrific, horrific things. But again, when you hear him talk, you don't, or even when you see him, I don't see it on the surface. I mean, this was like in his soul. He was just a bad guy. But outwardly, I mean, he had a job, right? He was able to snow people, camouflage these things that he was doing. But he's murdered a number of people at this apartment already. And neighbors are starting to complain about the smells.
Well, they should.
And you would imagine that they would. They're also starting to complain that they're hearing some chainsaw noises at odd hours.
A little Leatherface action going on?
Well, in an apartment complex, you don't really expect to hear somebody using a chainsaw, you know, not cutting down a tree or anything like that. But we know what Jeffrey Dahmer was using it for. But what Dahmer would say to people and neighbors, and he would say that his freezer broke and that's what that smell, you know, all the spoiled meat and things, that's where the smell was coming from. He also said his fish died at one point, which is a little less plausible.
Yeah.
You know, Gibbs, this part of 1991, Dahmer is murdering people at an astounding rate. And one night he's at the club and a man by the name of Tony Hughes is there. And Tony Hughes was deaf and mute. And Dahmer actually passes him a note inviting him back to his apartment for drinks. And when he gets this man, Tony Hughes, back to his apartment, he drugs him, dismembers him, and he keeps the skull. And just a couple of days later, like he's not satisfied, right? Things are escalating at an alarming rate. Just a few days later, he offers money to a 14-year-old boy named Conorak Cenathosophone. It's a very hard name to say.
Want me to say it for you?
You can try.
That's okay.
I don't like mispronouncing victims' names. It's a very tough name
to say. It is a tough name to say.
and this is a 14-year-old kid. He offers this boy money to pose nude for him. But there's an unbelievable connection here because Conorak was the younger brother of the boy that Jeffrey Dahmer had molested back in 1988, 3 years earlier. So it's unbelievable when you think about the fact that, you know, he victimized two boys from the same family, two brothers. He drugs this boy. He performs oral sex on him while he's out. And at one point, he takes this boy into the room where the body of Tony Hughes is laying. Remember, he'd just been killed just a few days earlier, and he's lying nude on the floor. I mean, you can't, it's hard to imagine this in your head, Gibbs, how horrific this would have been. You know, this kid ends up passing out from a combination of the drugs and the abuse and all that. But at some point, he does wake up and he manages to get outside of the house. He stumbles out of the apartment. You know, he's dazed, he's woozy. It was said that he was bleeding from his rectum, but he's spotted by some women on the street, and they actually call 911.
Okay, hi. I'm on 25th and State, and this is young man. He is butt naked. He has been beaten up. He is very bruised up. He can't stand. He's study fall out. He is butt naked. He has no clothes on. He was really hurt. And I ain't got no corner on him. I just seen him, and he needs some help.
Where is he at?
On 25th and State, the corner of 25th and State.
He's just on the corner at the street?
Yeah, he in the middle of the street. He's fell out. We trying to help him. Some people trying to help him.
Okay, and he's unconscious right now?
Yeah, he getting him up, but he is bruised up. Somebody must have jumped on him and stripped him or whatever.
So she said he was butt naked a couple of times. But these are good Samaritans. I mean, they are trying to get this kid some help, and police respond. But in comes Jeffrey Dahmer to talk to the police as they're investigating. And he tells them that this kid's 19 years old, that they're lovers. And they just, you know, he'd been drinking. They got in a fight. So he's telling this story to the cops. And they believe him. And they let him take this boy back into the apartment.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. 14 years old, 19 years old. There's quite a difference there.
Doesn't, you got somebody's naked, bleeding, incoherent.
Bleeding out of the rear end. And the police handling of this incident, it's going to come under a huge amount of fire and scrutiny later on.
Which it should.
And it should, because from all the details, everything you read, they should have done more.
Today, a published report says two neighbors saw the boy staggering naked outside the apartment just 2 months ago, and they called police. But the Milwaukee Sentinel says police brushed aside the incident as a domestic dispute between lovers.
Regarding the victim, Conorak Synthesophone, I've confirmed that on May the 27th, 1991, members of the Milwaukee Police Department had contact with the accused Jeff Dahmer and the victim. This is a matter of grave concern to me and the entire department. The officers involved will be suspended from duty pending the outcome of this investigation.
Well, Chief, how do you feel about the fact that seemingly Dahmer slipped through your fingers back in May and that his ensuing victims would be alive today, possibly if those officers had investigated?
I wish I could put that feeling into words for you today.
Could you try?
No, I cannot.
So obviously that's a press conference later on, but I wanted to play it here. You hear the question. We know there's going to be more victims, and the cops could have stopped it. Even if, Gibbs, they would have run him. I mean, his background, a registered sex offender.
Yeah, they should definitely have done more for sure. I'm really amazed that they didn't even get his ID.
Yeah, and you know, I hate to bag on the cops, but man, sometimes they just get it wrong.
This one they got wrong.
I do believe they did. What's so sad about it is he ends up killing this boy. By every measure, should have gotten away, tried to get away, was essentially handed back to Jeffrey Dahmer by the police, and he ends up killing him. Dahmer's next victim would be a man named Matt Turner. They actually met in Chicago, and somehow Dahmer is able to talk Matt Turner into traveling to Milwaukee I think, again, it's all around some the guise of a photo shoot. He's drugged, he's strangled, he's dismembered. And with this victim, Dahmer takes the head and the organs and puts them in the freezer. And the very next month, he goes back to Chicago and he lures a man named Jeremiah Weinberger back to his house, drugs him. And with Jeremiah, he injects boiling hot water into his head.
I'm trying to think how you do that.
Suck it up into a syringe from like a boiling pot, I guess. And then.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Stick it in somebody's head, I guess, and then push the plunger. That's all I know. I
wonder why he thinks that's going to be better.
I think he's just...
Likes to experiment.
I think he's just experimenting. I don't know what other word to use. He's trying different things, but it throws this man into a coma, and he dies a couple days later. Because again, I think this is another instance where he's trying to keep somebody alive, but essentially lobotomized. And he's trying different variations of the drilling and the acid. Now he's trying boiling hot water. And in that very same month, so we're still in July of 1991. You know, this, as we call it, Gibbs, the frog demon, the urges, they are so strong for Jeffrey Dahmer right now.
It's peak season.
At some point, it's almost like one victim a week, it seems like. But he meets a man named Oliver Lacey. And again, uses this, I'll give you money if you'll let me take nude photographs of you. They do have sex, but then Dahmer drugs Lacey. But his experimenting this time, Gibbs, he's with trying to keep this man alive, he turns to chloroform. But that doesn't work. So he ends up strangling. So it's almost like this cycle of, okay, I'm going to try this. And when it doesn't work, I'm going to strangle the person. I'm going to dismember them. I'm going to keep some of the body parts.
Have sex with the body parts.
I'm going to have sex with the body parts sometimes. In this case, he puts the head and the heart in the fridge. He puts some parts in the freezer. But somewhere around this point, you know, it's kind of amazing because Dahmer has been able to keep this job at the chocolate factory for quite a long time. But his work performance was slipping. He gets fired. So now he has even more time on his hand.
If you struggle to get in shape and lose weight, I'm about to change your life. I'm Carl, the CEO of Body, and I don't like working out and eating healthy either. So here's how I get myself to do it. I make myself own the morning. And by the morning, I mean the first hour or so of every day. It's not family time. It's not for scrolling social media. It's for my results and for my health. And man, does it work. Every day, I get out of bed, drink a health shake, and then I go crush a workout on the Body app and just follow along day by day. Before most people are even out of bed, I'm done for the day. So here's my special introductory offer to you. If you go to body.com to sign up, the next 5,000 new subscribers will get 72% off a full year of access to over 120 programs. Yeah, that's only 33 cents a day to start now and see how fast the pounds come off. And if they don't, you can get your money back, no questions asked. Just go to body.com to save 72% and get life-changing results. That's BODI.com.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So things are happening so quickly in this month of July of 1991 when Dahmer is able to lure a man named Joseph Bradenhoff back to his house. And this is actually going to be Dahmer's last murder victim. Bradenhoff is 25 years old. You know, they are intimate. And eventually Dahmer strangles him, kills him, leaves his body laying around the house for a few days. And then when he decides to come back to the body because he's going to do whatever it is he's going to do with it, he finds maggots everywhere, on the body, on his sheets. My skin starts to crawl even talking about it. He cuts off the head, he puts it in the refrigerator, but he takes the torso and he puts it in a big you know, like 55 gallon drum, puts acid in there. He's got some other victims in there as well.
That's disturbing. I mean, the whole thing is disturbing, but I mean.
Well, and I can remember on the news, and a lot of people will, they actually captured it on tape, them wheeling out this 55-gallon drum. But on July 22nd, I mean, five, six people, this is six person that we're talking about in July alone. He's able to get a man named Tracy Edwards to come back to the house, you know, offered him money to, again, take nude photographs. But Tracy's going to survive this encounter. And, you know, he's going to live to talk about it. And he said when he got to the house, he immediately noticed the horrible smell of death. And he saw containers of acid around the house. And Tracy Edwards is different from most of the victims. He's not homosexual. He was heterosexual. But at some point, they're having drinks. Dahmer gets out handcuffs and is able to get one handcuff on, but he's not able to get the second one on. So Dahmer pulls out a knife because he's not able to subdue this guy, and he is able to, you know, force him into the bedroom. And what Tracy Edwards would say is that in this bedroom, there were pictures of naked men everywhere, plastered on the walls. The movie Exorcist 3 was playing. And Jeffrey Dahmer talks about this, Gibbs. He was mesmerized by the movie The Exorcist number 3. There's something in that one that he connected with. And Edwards would later say that, you know, he saw the big drum in the corner and he said he could tell there was something in there. It smelled horrible. And then Edwards said something very strange happened. Dahmer just sat down, put the knife down, started looking at the TV that was playing this Exorcist 3 movie, and just started rocking back and forth, chanting, almost like he was in some kind of a trance. And this is, and I kind of foreshadowed it before, but then when Dahmer looked back, this is when he said that he wanted to listen to Tracy Edwards' heartbeat and that ultimately he was going to eat his heart. And this whole time, you know, Tracy Edwards is trying to placate Dahmer, saying he's his friend, he's not going to leave. He's trying to calm Jeffrey Dahmer down. And at one point he says, you know, I got to use the bathroom. And then Tracy Edwards finds his perfect spot. And he punches Jeffrey Dahmer right in the face and he bolts out the front door.
He was listening to my heart because at a point he told me he was going to eat my heart at that point. I hit him and I ran.
So not very long, but that's a clip of Tracy Edwards.
What do you do in this situation? Hit him in the face and
hit
run.
Hit him in the face and run.
Yep.
But he was lucky to get out of there alive because so many people before him in that exact situation, they never made it.
You know, at any dinner party, he's the one everybody's sitting around wants to hear that story about how he got away.
Some people might be able to talk about that pretty easily. Some people, it would be so traumatic, they would never want to bring it up again. You just never know.
Yeah, it's true.
But it would be one hell of a story to sit and listen to. But things roll on pretty quick from here, right? Because Tracy Edwards goes to the cops. He's able to lead police to Jeffrey Dahmer's apartment. He'd been there for about 5 hours. And police are questioning Dahmer. And he does admit to handcuffing Tracy Edwards. But he says, you know, kind of like he did with that boy earlier on, you know, this was sex play. He's trying to play all of this off to the cops. What else can he do?
It worked before.
It did work before. It shouldn't have, but it did. But it doesn't take police very long. They find the knife that he had that he was, you know, holding Tracy Edwards essentially hostage with. They see a drawer. It's got a bunch of those Polaroids. You know right away, Gibbs, some of those Polaroids, they're not just of nude men. They're of nude...
torsos?
Dead.
Yeah.
Dismembered. In the process of dismembering. I mean, right away, police know that they've stumbled onto something. And Dahmer knows it too, because he tries to fight him at one point, but they get him down pretty quick. They cuff him. And then they go to the refrigerator. And inside the refrigerator, they find a severed head on the shelf. I mean, what are you thinking as a police officer at that point? I mean, you open up the Maytag there and the Frigidaire, and there is a human head on the shelf.
I think I would have thrown up.
I know you would have. You got a weak constitution for this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But when it's all said and done and investigators comb through that house, you know, they find 4 severed heads, 7 skulls, blood all over the place, 2 hearts, part of somebody's bicep muscle, human organs and flesh in the freezer. And it was said that, you know, it'd been there a while. It was stuck to ice, like it was frozen together. They find 2 whole complete skeletons, a pair of severed hands, a couple of severed penises that had been preserved in some kind of solution, a mummified scalp, and then, you know, the big 55-gallon drum that was filled with acid. When they got a hold of that thing, it had 3 torsos in it that were dissolving in acid. And it was said that they found a total of 74 Polaroid pictures. And some of these, you know, had to have been so unbelievably brutal. It's hard to imagine what these pictures even were. It's not something you even want inside your head.
No, I can't even imagine flipping through all those.
The chief medical examiner would come out and say that it was like going through a museum, taking apart a museum, more so than any crime scene he'd ever seen.
Some neighbors here had complained of a stench for almost a year, but they never imagined what might be causing it. Milwaukee police were led to an apartment in this building after they were flagged down by a handcuffed man who claimed he had been attacked. What they discovered upon their arrival was almost unspeakable. Numerous pieces from as many as 15 human bodies, including 3 heads preserved in a refrigerator.
It's obvious that there has been a number of human specimens found within the apartment, and to a certain extent, they have been there sometime.
A hazardous materials team breathing from air tanks confiscated a number of items from the suspect's apartment. Among them, police say, photographs and drawings of dead mutilated bodies and a vat of acid. Police believe the suspect may have used the acid to dissolve body parts. Neighbors also say they heard sawing in the apartment at all hours of the day and night.
Wouldn't you? If you're the neighbor and you hear sawing at all hours, day and night, maybe give 911 a call.
And the smell.
And the smell, too. I'm surprised.
I mean, the only thing is, in the research, it did talk about this is a rough area. So I don't know if maybe people didn't want to call. They weren't used to calling the police. They didn't want to call the police. Maybe they were into some shady stuff, too. I don't know. But you would think somebody would have alerted authorities that, you know, something's going on. Guy's got a damn chainsaw that he's using at 2:00 in the morning. I got to be up at 5.
I'm going to have a problem with that.
Yeah, I would have a huge problem with that. Now, Jeffrey Dahmer might not be the person that you want to knock on the door and start bitching to, though.
It's true. He might make you a little...
He might give you a coffee, and the next thing you know, you're...
Yeah.
Nobody will ever see you again.
He's having fun with your head.
I think about that stuff, Gibbs. The older I get, you know, I used to be a real hothead when I was younger. I've tried to tone that down a little bit, because you just don't know.
Who's on the other side?
Yep.
I tell people that all the time.
Could be you.
You don't know what I'd...
I always think I could run into another Gibby and then...
You could. You never
I'm in
know.
Big trouble.
It's the quiet ones you have to look out for.
It is. It is. But, you know, Dahmer confessed to these pretty quickly. He started to confess quickly. It took a while to get it all out. I mean, you're talking about a lot of murders, a lot of details. It took a couple of weeks. It was said maybe 60 hours of interviews. He waived his right to an attorney, just said he wanted to confess. You know, so ultimately, he confesses to murdering 16 people in Wisconsin in what is essentially 4 years, right? From about 87 to 91, 16 people. And then Stephen Hicks, he would tell police that, because you know they asked him, Gibbs, why did you keep the skulls? Why did you keep skeletons and different parts and this and that? And Dahmer would tell them that he was planning on making an altar from the body parts of his victims. And he talked about that this was going to be a place where he would meditate and he would garner his power from this altar. That's some sick shit, man. It really is. Jeffrey Dahmer is, he's something else.
That's a whole nother level.
Yeah, he is. He is at a whole nother level. I mean, there are people that we'll get to that are worse than him, but not many. I mean, he is really up there. You know, his trial started in January of 92, and there was a lot of racial tension, you know, at this trial. The majority of these victims were African American. You know, there were some Caucasian victims, there were some Asian victims, but a large part of the victims were African American, and that caused a lot of racial tension, coupled with the fact that, you know, not only were they ticked off at Jeffrey Dahmer for what he'd done, they were ticked at the cops for what we already talked about. And, you know, after it came out that they could have stopped this before a good number of victims were killed. Dahmer started out pleading not guilty, even though he had confessed to all the crimes. I don't get that. We hear that sometimes, you know, as we're going through these cases, and I never do understand that. Then he changed it to say that he was guilty by reason of insanity. And of course, the defense would, they had all the horrible details of what he did. And basically they said, you know, no sane person or no person that was in their right mind would do these things. And there's a part of you that has to think, yeah, that is true. But, you know, I don't think he was insane. I really don't. I think he was evil. I think he was compulsive.
Doesn't sound insane to me. Sounds like he knew what he was doing.
I do. I think he knew what he was doing. I think he knew it was wrong. I just don't think he could stop himself. You know, almost like an alcoholic or
compulsive.
Somebody that's addicted to something. He was addicted to this. He got addicted to it. He couldn't stop himself. Or he didn't want to stop himself. One or the other. And either way, it doesn't matter.
Some addictions kill, man.
I believe he knew what he was doing. You know, the jury didn't buy any of what the defense tried to offer up. They found him guilty on all counts. Only took him about 10 hours to deliberate. And originally he got 15 consecutive life terms, and then he got another one, a 16th later on. But I want to play a clip of the sister of Errol Lindsay, one of the victims, during the the impact statement, because it's very powerful.
The oldest sister of Errol Lindsay, whatever your name is, Satan, I'm mad. This is how you act when you are out of control. I don't want to ever see my mother have to go through this again. Never, Jeffrey. Jeffrey, I hate you, motherfucker. I hate you. This is out of control.
And she went off on him. She called him Satan there at one point.
That's what she did, yeah. She was probably spot on with that.
And then she called him a whole bunch of other names, yeah. Too. But she was,
I don't blame her, man.
Yeah, I don't either. And a lot of people have probably heard that. It was played, not with all the cuss words, but it was played on the news quite a bit back in the day.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of other impact statements too. But then Jeffrey Dahmer addresses the court. And he only talks, right? He didn't take the stand. So he really only talks in court at the very end when everything's kind of said and done.
I didn't ever want freedom. Frankly, I wanted death for myself. This was a case to tell the world that I did what I did not for reasons of hate. I hated no one. I knew I was sick or evil or both. Now I believe I was sick. I should have stayed with God. I tried and failed and created a Holocaust. And if I could give my life right now to bring their loved ones back, I would do it. I am so very sorry. I deserve whatever I get because of what I have done.
And we touched on this in the first episode, Gibbs. The one thing that Dahmer does is he does take responsibility for what he did. I mean, even in the first episode, in the clip where he's saying, you know, you can't blame my parents. This was on me.
Yeah, but it's easy to take responsibility when you got life sentences.
Oh, when you're already caught, sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to sit back and do that and try to sound like you're a better person now than
you were. You're right. But there are a lot of people that don't. Right? There are a lot of people that fight it and say, oh, it was somebody else, or I was made to do this by whatever, you know.
I let them all burn.
I'm with you. Especially him, man. Just the things he did. So Dahmer goes to prison. He's segregated. from general population.
Oh, yeah, because he'd be the target, man.
But at some point, he actually asks prison officials for them to let him be around other inmates.
Well, because he knew what would happen.
And he did say he wanted death.
He did. And if that's what you want, that's what you do. You go in the general pop, and guess what?
Oh, so guess what? In July of 94, a man named Osvaldo Dorothy, prisoner, he tried to slash Dahmer's throat with a shank.
Yeah, you can't really slash too good with a shank, and that's where he messed up.
Yeah, he only got kind of superficial wounds. It didn't, you know, it wasn't a knife. It didn't, he wasn't really that hurt by the attack. But his family came out and said that Dahmer was ready to die. I mean, kind of to your point. He had to have known that people were going to come after him in Gen Pop. And I think he was ready for it. He was ready to accept it, whether, you know, because he didn't want to sit in prison for the rest of his life in solitude. I don't know. But he didn't have to wait long, because on November 28th, 1994, he was assigned this work detail with two other convicted murderers. So basically three murderers trying to get some work done. That's what you got here.
It'll be a little power struggle of who tells who what.
who's the boss? Who's the supervisor in that situation? So one of the man's name was Jesse Anderson, and the other was Christopher Scarver. And at some point during this work detail, they were kind of left alone by the guards. The guards weren't right there. And Scarver ended up beating both of these men with like a bar from a barbell or dumbbell. And Jeffrey Dahmer would die about an hour after the beating. This other man, Jesse Anderson, died a few days later.
Yeah, he took out two.
Yeah, he didn't just kill Jeffrey Dahmer. He killed another prisoner,
too. Bonus round.
Jeffrey Dahmer met his death this morning while working as a janitor, cleaning a prison bathroom. Another inmate is suspected of beating him to death at this prison in Wisconsin. Authorities here say Dahmer died of massive head injuries. A second inmate injured in the attack is in critical condition.
What was found at the scene was a bloody broom handle. That's all I know.
To many, including Dahmer's own attorney, it comes as little surprise.
I wasn't shocked because I thought that Jeffrey Dahmer would end up this way.
I don't know what happened with that bloody broom handle, Gibbs. I couldn't figure it out. There could have been some extracurricular activities going on.
I think maybe so.
That I don't think anybody would have batted an eye at, but he was definitely killed with he wasn't killed with a broom handle. He was killed with like a metal, not a pipe, but you know, what you hold on to when you're lifting weights or something like that.
Dumbbell.
Yeah. Like the barbell or the part that
right.
you put the weight on.
Yeah. The bar.
But Christopher Scarver, so he's the man that killed Jeffrey Dahmer, and he would come out later and say why he killed him. And the reasons were kind of odd or kind of different than what you would think. It wasn't because he was a serial killer. It wasn't because Christopher Scarver was African American and Dahmer had killed a bunch. It wasn't anything like that. The reason that he was disturbed by his crimes, but what really pushed Scarver over the edge was that apparently Jeffrey Dahmer had this habit of taking his food at chow time, and he would form it into look like severed limbs. And then he would pour ketchup on it. And he wouldn't eat the food. He would just leave it sit there for everybody to see. And apparently Scarver got tired of seeing that shit. And he beat him to death.
Well, that sounds like he was doing it on purpose. You know, like they said, taunting him by doing that.
He was. And I think he was taunting everybody. I think he was asking for death in a way. I don't know if he was or not, but why would you do that in a place filled with killers? Especially when they say, hey, stop doing that. You're pissing me off. Well, you keep doing it. You're asking for something.
Yeah, I think he was, and he got what he asked for.
Now, Scarver would also say that the prison guards could have stopped him, but they didn't. You know, they could have stopped him before he killed Jeffrey Dahmer, but they let it happen. So Jeffrey Dahmer left a will, and basically it said he didn't want any type of service. He wanted to be cremated, and he was. He was cremated, and apparently his ashes were split between his parents. So just to talk about just a few random things, Gibbs, as we wrap this episode up, after he was arrested, and convicted and all of that. Jeffrey Dahmer's estate, and you say estate, it's kind of a strong word for what Jeffrey Dahmer had, right? He had a shithole apartment, but it was awarded to the families of a number of the victims who had sued him. And at one point, the families got together and they were going to auction off the stuff from his house. They were going to auction off the refrigerator that held their family members. They were going to, you know, auction off all these pieces. And you know people would have
bought them. There's people out there that love that stuff, man.
There would have been a lot of people probably lining up to buy a piece of Jeffrey Dahmer.
Get that fridge and put their peanut butter and jelly sandwich in it.
Yeah, I don't know if they would have used it to store actual food in. It would not be FDA safe at this point, I don't think. But a lot of people said, you know, that's not right. you can't do that.
Yeah.
And so what happened was there was some type of civic group that they raised a bunch of money to give to the families, and they took all of his possessions and they destroyed them.
Good for them.
Yeah.
That's the way it should be.
That whole apartment building was demolished.
Thank goodness.
And now it's a vacant lot.
Still creepy.
His father and stepmom still live in Ohio, I think. And at one point, his dad actually wrote a book. You heard his dad in some of the interviews in the first episode. He wrote a book called A Father's Story. And he gave a good amount of the proceeds to the victims. You got to give him some credit for that.
Yeah.
And if you believe Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, he really said that his parents were not to blame. You know, they didn't do anything to him to cause him to be this monster that he ended up becoming. His mother died from cancer in 2000. And his brother David, we talked about him in the first episode, Jeffrey Dahmer actually named him. He changed his last name.
Don't blame him.
And so very little is known about him. But Dahmer, I mean, that name just evokes like a sense of dread. And there's not, you know, I don't think it's a very common name. So to walk around being David Dahmer.
Yeah, people would.
It's not going to take them long to figure out.
Pop culture Dahmer Rifkin.
Yeah.
Right? There's certain names that you hear and you're like,
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like you're David Smith or David Jones.
Right.
David Dahmer is going to stick out pretty good. So that's it for the story of Jeffrey Dahmer. One of the worst that we've done, I think.
Yeah, thanks for the nightmares tonight.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right, Gibbs, so let's cleanse the palate a little bit. Let's play a couple of voicemails.
Hi, Mike and Gibby. This is Kelly King out here in New Hampshire. I wanted to thank you so, so much for my little present with the mug. I love everything. It's like Christmas, super early Christmas, but awesome. And I love your podcast. I listen to it all the time. And you guys do an awesome job. And keep your own time ticking. Have a great Christmas. Bye.
Oh, thank you so much, Kelly. Glad you're enjoying the merchandise.
Is that where my mug went?
Yeah. I had to send your mug to Kelly.
I hope she washed it out.
I hope she washed it, too.
Yeah.
Oh, it always cracks me up. It never gets old to me. It probably gets old to listeners.
Yeah.
But
it gets old to me.
I know it does.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Mary down in Jacksonville, Florida. I work at UPS and we're going through peak season. I just want to let you know that I just love your show and it gets me through the day, especially these long days for peak season at UPS. Have a great Christmas and thank you.
Hey, I remember those seasons.
I was going to ask you, fellow UPS employee, you might have trained Mary back in the day.
Maybe.
Were you down in the Jacksonville area?
No. 10 years, though. I know exactly what she's going through.
It is a rough time of year for postal workers, UPS, FedEx. Yeah. Very busy.
They're out there humping it.
But we appreciate the voicemail, Mary. Thank you so much. All right, Gibbs, I don't know if that was, not as many voicemails, so I don't know if that was enough to cleanse your palate.
No.
It's going to take a lot more than that, I think.
Well, people need to leave more voicemails. That's just what it is.
You're going to have to go home and watch some comedies or something to... But that's it. Another episode of True Crime All the Time. So for Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Allow your imagination to be piqued by stories that are brought to life through captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. As an Audible member, you'll be able to keep your heart rate up month after month because you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. If you're in the mood for a shocking psychological thriller, check out None of This Is True by Lisa Jewell. Embrace brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.